Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, board members. Agenda paper 31 asks the board to take three decisions about SWIP issues that have arisen in drafting the exposure draft. So I'll be teeing up the first two topics and Elizabeth will do the last. So let me go over the first point and I will ask for your decision before moving on to the next point. So the first topic is about recent amendments to IS-1 and practice statement 2. In February 2021, the board issued amendments to IS-1 to require an entity to disclose its material accounting policy information rather than its significant accounting policies. As a result, the requirement for an entity to disclose its measurement basis or basis was deleted. The amendments also added para the measurement basis or basis for financial statements used in preparing the financial statements is expected to be material accounting policy information. So these amended disclosure requirements are not a result of recognition and measurement difference between IFRS standards and IFRS for SMEs. Thus, applying the board's agreed approach in developing the disclosure requirements, the amendments to the disclosure requirements of IS-1 would not be part of the exposure draft. However, not including them would result in the ED being inconsistent with the rest of the guidance in IS-1 that would remain applicable to the subsidiary applying the draft standard. So further updating the amendments is supported by BC-157 of the IFRS for SME standard, the principles used in the project. We therefore recommend that amendments affecting disclosure requirements in IS-1, including the related amendments to IFRS 7, be included in the exposure draft. So now we'd like to invite your comments on this topic, if any, before asking you to vote on question 1 in page 3.
Anne.
Thanks, Hans. Thanks, Carlo. I do agree with the proposals in question 1 and question 2. I think it would look very strange if we didn't respond in this ED regarding material accounting policies. I think it would look very strange. It would look like we didn't support our own previous decision. It would look like we were pursuing form over substance, the form being it's not a recognition and measurement difference, and I think that would be inappropriate. So I agree with what you're recommending. In relation to question 2, the way I'm reading what you're giving us is that the disclosures around 22A would be incomplete without adding the 22JC. So this is a question for you. This is, it's not just, oh, it'd be nice to have 22JC. The way I'm reading it is that we actually have to have that in there. It's not just, because when you do this, it's always so difficult to decide what stays in and what stays out. And the way I'm reading it is that 24JC needs to be there because it really, it's part of 22A disclosures around risk management strategy. Would you agree? Am I reading that correctly?
Elizabeth might would like to add something on this, but yeah, I think you do read it correctly, and I do agree with you.
Okay. Yes, I agree.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks, Carlo. Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Okay, then are we ready to vote on the staff's recommendation?
Question 1.
Question 1. Okay, Carlo.
Sorry, Hans. So I think Anne has commented on question 2 a little bit, but let me just quickly go over it. So in August 2020, the board issued interest rate benchmark reform phase 2, which amends, among others, IFRS 7. So applying the board's approach in developing disclosure requirements, the two amended disclosures in IFRS 7 would not be added in the exposure draft. However, we think that the board since the board tentatively decided to propose including paragraph 22A of IFRS 7 in the ED, which principally explains the entity's risk management strategy, it would be consistent to add paragraph 24JC of IFRS 7 to the ED, as this explains changes to the risk management strategy, as a result of interest rate benchmark reform. We therefore recommend that paragraph 24GC of IFRS 7 be included in the exposure draft. So again, let me open the floor for any comments. Or, yeah, and then I'll draw your attention to question 2 in page 5.
Okay. Mary, did you want to ask a question?
I did, Carla, and I apologize because I didn't give you a heads up about this one in advance. But when I look at paragraph 12 of this paper, you go through the three things that are in IFRS 9 paragraph 24J. You end up recommending that we pick up 12C, which is the resulting changes to the entity's risk management strategy. You are not recommending 12A or B, and B in particular is striking me as the quantitative information about outstanding instruments subject, you know, that are still subject to transition risk. Could you just give me a bit of flavor about why you thought C made the cut for including, but B and A did not?
Carla, do you want me to?
Yep, you can go ahead, Elizabeth.
You can. Mary, the main reason was because I understand what you're saying, but when we followed the agreed approach, we would have had none of them. So our main reason for coming up with, for recommending C, was the draft standard will already include a requirement, as we've just discussed, from para 22A of IFRS 7 to discuss risk management strategy. So we thought it was important that changes to that were also disclosed. And we hadn't seen A and B as adding to or necessary to add to the draft standard.
Hans, if I could come back in.
Yes, please.
I think it may be worth thinking about asking specifically about this, or at least flagging that. And, you know, I'm not trying to necessarily change the proposal at this time. And I think some of it is going to be a timing matter, you know, in terms of when we expect this to be effective versus progress with LIBOR transition. So it may make it less significant, as well as expecting perhaps fewer of these things for most SME, you know, entities that are SMEs. But it does seem to be, from a user perspective, particularly, you know, from a more a credit side. I mean, I'm relying on Zach and Nick to correct me if I'm playing outside my pay grade here. But my sense is that if you did have significant exposure, even as a credit analyst, which is, I think, the main lens we're assuming for users of these financial statements, that could be quite significant information. So I think we should make people aware that that's something that would fall out, for this project.
Okay, any more comments, questions? No. Are we ready to vote for question 2? Okay, Carla, you can finish up.
Let me hand over to Elizabeth for topic 3.
All right.
Thank you. Topic 3. This is about comments received on whether the standard should include a list of disclosure requirements in other IFRS standards that an entity electing to apply our draft standard is exempt from. And we've received mixed feedback on this. So the pre-ballot draft included an appendix A, that lists individually all the disclosure requirements in the other IFRS standards that a subsidiary that would apply the draft standard would be exempt from. Now, we included this appendix our view for including it was to improve clarity. Because there is a blurring between, so there's sometimes a blurring between presentation and disclosure requirements, as we've described in paragraph 21 of the agenda paper. And we also thought that this would therefore assist preparers and auditors. Now, as I say, we've received mixed feedback, and the feedback we've received from reviewers who questioned whether we should have such an appendix, that's set out in paragraph 24 of the agenda paper. The staff recommend we do include the appendix, Appendix A, listing all disclosure requirements in other standards an entity would be exempt from, and we have two reasons. First, some jurisdictions include IFRS standards in the legislation, and so we thought having the standard, which would also therefore be in legislation, clearly listing which of the requirements in those other standards an entity is exempt from, we thought that was needed. And second, as I've already said, because of the blurring between presentation and disclosure requirements, some presentation requirements actually say disclose. We thought it would avoid confusion and potential discussion between preparers and their auditors. So I invite any questions you have ahead of taking the vote on question three.
Sorry, I was on mute. Sue?
Thanks, Hans. From my side, I agree with the staff recommendation, Elizabeth, for a couple of reasons that you have included. One is that I think we need to be explicit because people don't know where we're drawing the line between what's disclosure and what's presentation. So I think we need something explicit on it. And for me, even though it is very much longhand, it's very clear. I think mucking around with asterisks and things like that, it's sort of nice and neat and tidy, but it's let's just say it as it is. And I think you can find it in one place and it's easy for people to see. Very clear. So I'd go with that.
Okay. Bruce?
Thanks, Hans. Unfortunately, I'm one of the people who's not very pro including Appendix A. And the reasons for it, I mean, we've seen some of them detailed in the paper, but I guess in my view, if we're looking at the way we generally write standards, we give a list of what we're requiring a preparer to put into a set of accounts. What I don't like about this is we're kind of giving a list of almost, and I hate to use the word checklist, but we're kind of giving a checklist of what not to include. The reason I don't like having this differentiation is that remember what we've said in the standard is these are the minimum items we expect you to give, but you can give more. So we're still saying to somebody, you can give, if a preparer is sitting there and they believe they need to give almost 90% of what's in the full IFRS, they're welcome to give that if they believe that's the value that's going to be added or required by user of the accounts. What worries me is when we put in a statement of things that you don't have to put in, it almost to me gives a negative connotation. It's almost creating a situation of saying, well, you don't need to give these. And I think that you don't need to give something means that a preparer would not sit and assess whether those would potentially add value. So I get worried that the message we're giving is almost a negative, well, you don't need to consider these, as opposed to we're giving a minimum, but you may need to consider giving more. So I don't like doing that. The other thing, of course, is that, and maybe this is looking to the future problems, but it's always one of those, you know, what if we had a situation where we missed one? So if for whatever reason something is missed, now you've got a situation where the two don't 100% reconcile, or if we've missed something, a small wording here or something, and then you've got a question of, well, is it required, is it not? Because not only are we worried about what's in the standard, I now need to almost double-check myself to check it's not in there, what shouldn't be there. So I just think we're creating a lot of complexity for preparers of the accounts. I think we're creating a lot of complexity for even the auditors on the other side of, well, have we checked what shouldn't be there? Have you considered why it shouldn't? I just don't like the answer to that. To me, I'd rather give people, this is what's required. That's generally what people are used to seeing when they see all of our standards. And then they can consider if there's anything else they want to give that's in the standards, in the full standard. So yeah, I wouldn't propose putting in Appendix A. Just on the other thing, if we do decide to put an Appendix A, so if I'm a minority voice in this, I'd agree with the comments that Sue made. You keep it simple. I think things like the asterisks and some of those other recommendations, I think are just going to become too complex. So as I said, in the first instance, I'd rather get rid of Appendix A, but in the second instance, if not, then we've got to keep it clear. Thanks.
Tadeo, thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Hans. I understand that Appendix A is helpful, but I thought it's more important in line with what Bruce said, but not to totally agree with that. It's more important to include what is required than what is not. I think it could be helpful, the Appendix A, in this process of consultation, but I'm not sure whether it could be helpful in the final standard. I do not oppose including this in the exposure draft, but I would suggest including a question on whether the stakeholders believe this is helpful as part of the standards. Thank you.
Jen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. Basically, I also support staff's proposal. I think a couple of reasons why that, although including Appendix A will not add additional requirements, but I think these kind of things nice to have, actually to help companies to easy to implement these standards, to make sure that which requirements required, which requirements, disclosure requirements, were exempted. I think it's, second is about, I think Elizabeth also mentioned about to make further clarity on those, blurring concerns between presentation and disclosure requirements in IFRS standards, because those companies still apply not only this reduced disclosure requirement, but also other standards. So bring that in the Appendix A can make sure that which disclosure requirement really were exempted, which other matters, particularly those blurring areas, may still be applicable to those companies. I think it will reduce some kind of risk for those companies. Certainly, I think also it's nice to have, as that you said, that because we are going to develop the exposure draft to seek the views from stakeholders. So at this stage, I think it's better to include in the exposure draft and seek the views from stakeholders, whether they like it or not. I think otherwise we cannot have this kind of feedback if we not included that Appendix A in the exposure draft. So at least we can have some further information from stakeholders to help board to decide when we move towards to next step of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen Chao. Anne?
Thanks, Hans. I support the publication of Appendix A, mainly because I think that just helps people as they're trying to use the standard. They can see what they're required to do, and they can have this point of reference all in one place of what they're not supposed to do. So in terms of getting feedback about this, we will be able to get some feedback from the AASB because their standard 1060 is operational for the 30th of June. And they've chosen to put the requirements for all the things you don't have to disclose in two places. They've got it in their implementation guidance, but they've actually amended every single standard to say which bits are not required. And we're not proposing that. We're not proposing to touch all our standards, and yet that's what they have done. So we'll be able to get some good feedback from them on application, which should help us attending to the decisions of what actually goes into the final standard. Thank you.
Okay. Françoise.
Thank you. To me, the only way that this standard can be helpful to people, if it contains a clear list of disclosure requirements, a clear list of what people have to do. So if staff believes that things are unclear, staff should make those clarifications within what is required. So we should not rely on a specific, on that appendix to bring clarity. We should bring clarity directly into what is required. Because if you put yourself in the shoes of someone who prepares financial statements, they want to know what they have to do. They really don't care about what they don't have to do once they have decided that they go for it. So, and I think we've had in the past very positive feedback from the IFRS for SMEs community, praising, in fact, the section that contains all disclosure requirements. They take it, they know what they have to do. So in this standard, we should have exactly the same objective, make sure that those people who apply the standard have a clear list of requirements, not keeping anything that is potentially blurred. Now, because we're divided, in fact, I'm very aligned with Tadeu, I think, let's put it in, I think it's a useful tool for consultation so that people can see also in one place what has been eliminated. That's useful, in my view, in order to evaluate our proposals. And I think going forward, because it's also important to see what comes next at the next revision, potentially, I think it would be so much more useful to people to have in the consultation showing on the particular amendment what is taken out, rather than having the full appendix updated with just the few changes. So it would, I think, be easier to handle. But because we're divided, let's raise a question to people so that we really know whether it is really helpful and to what purpose, or whether it's not. But bringing it without a question, I would not agree with.
Mary?
I support the staff recommendation. I want to go back to the point about the drafting of our standards in some places commingles presentation and disclosure requirements, and we're making a distinction between those two in terms of where for which we are giving relief from and which we are not. And I think clarity is very important to make the point that you're getting exemption from disclosure requirements but not presentation requirements. So with that objective, I think the list is the cleanest way to do it. So that's why I support the staff recommendation. I just wanted to comment that I thought the alternative suggestion of going through and marking up every standard to, in some way, an asterisk or otherwise, indicate what would not be required would also be equally clear, but I do not want to go that route because it imposes costs on every user of the standard, not just those who are using this draft standard. And that's a subset of population. And I think we want to do this project only if it does not increase cost for the ongoing use of the existing standard. So I just wanted to put a real caution against the approach outlined in 24C. Staff is not recommending that, but I just wanted to caution against being attracted to it as a late decision.
Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I think I support the staff recommendation. I think this appendix is more than nice to have because the work we have done is new and very complicated. And without having the appendix, I really have more time to review the draft document. So it's really helpful for the user of this standard. And what we want to do is to make the more helpful for subsidiaries that SMEs. But if we don't provide this appendix, these companies or auditors of this company will have to prepare the exact same document. So I think I support the staff recommendation to provide this part of standard.
Thank you, Rika. Nick?
So like others, I would also support staff recommendation that for the sake of clarity, Appendix A is included in the exposure draft. But above and beyond that, I'd be behind Tadil's suggestion that we ask a question on this in the exposure draft also. Thank you.
Martin, finally.
Yes, I also support staff recommendation because I think it could only be helpful for preparers doing that. And the overall idea was, okay, people, preparers who are on full IFRS could reduce disclosure, and say what they could reduce, I think, is straightforward and only helpful. So I support staff recommendation.
Okay. Can I see, the staff recommendation? Is somebody counting? Seems.
I made it 10. Did anyone else?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. 10 agree.
All right.
Thomas wanted to say something.
All right. Can we move to the next topic? Yes.